Hi, I'm Steve Coburn, proud owner of Country Air Pet Resort here in Reading. I invite you to come and take a tour of my revitalized pet resort. Our goal here at Country Air is to make sure your pet can relax and have a healthy, happy time away from home. With friendly, caring people, lots of fresh air and exercise, good healthy food, and plenty of pampering. There are no small cages here. What we offer are large temperature-controlled runs and spacious exercise yards that are great for fun and socialization. We even offer daycare. Cats are treated to a two-room apartment plus playtime in our playroom. So stop by and take a tour of the best. You and your pet will want to come back to Country Air Pet Resort, where our motto is, we treat your pets as if they were our own. Country Air Pet Resort, 549-3335.
From the historic campus of Hillsdale College in Hillsdale, Michigan, where the good, the true, and the beautiful are taught, nurtured, and honored, this is the Radio Free Hillsdale Hour, bringing the activity and education of the college to listeners across the country.
Because this thing that has grown up, that has consumed half our economy and driven us near bankruptcy, and threatens to reduce us to despotism, we've got to the place now where it can't go on much more. It's a house divided, and it must become one thing or the other. And if it becomes the new thing that it's trying to become, it will be a contemptible and miserable thing.
This is your host, Scott Bertram. Welcome to the Radio Free Hillsdale Hour, part of the Hillsdale College Podcast Network. That was Dr. Larry Arn, president of Hillsdale College. We'll hear excerpts from a recent lecture he gave in February of this year. Also on today's show, Ryan P. Williams talks about his book about Angelo Codevilla, and Nathan Herring from Hillsdale's physics department tells us all about Sir Isaac Newton. First, we hear excerpts from a recent speech by Dr. Larry Arn, president of Hillsdale College. This lecture was delivered back in February of this year in Phoenix, Arizona, as part of a Hillsdale College National Leadership Seminar, the title, Defending the American Way of Life. Dr. Arn begins by answering the question, what kind of people are we?
Are we a chosen people? What kind of people are we? What is our way of life? Our way of life is produced by a principle and a story. And the story has produced institutions and a human type, and both are unique and wonderful. The principle is contained in the Declaration of Independence. It's a very controversial, as it is a very beautiful document. It's revolutionary, literally and figuratively. It raised a reaction from the King of England. The King of England lived in the old world. In the old world, people were born to rule. That was right, he argued, in response to the Declaration of Independence. That was right because those who are so born take on responsibilities to rule well. And then during the siege of Boston, he caused a proclamation to be distributed to the American army on the hills above Boston, waiting for Henry Knox to bring the cannon from Fort Ticonderoga, big fat Henry Knox, dragging cannon through the ice in the winter. And in the proclamation, he says, I was born to be your king, and I will be a good king. I'm owed you that. And you're born to be my people. And you must be a good people. And he thought that would settle the matter. And at a moment when George Washington's army was melting away, that was distributed, and the army stayed and grew. They thought something different. They thought all men are created equal.
More from Dr. Arn as he tells us about the uniqueness of the American story.
The story unfolds, not just because of the principle, but because of elements of the story. And the story is unique, and like the story of the Jews, cannot be repeated. Because never before had civilization got a chance to move to a new world not knowing what it was. Can't happen again. Today the world's mapped now. Well, Elon's going to Mars. And I'm going to say something about him, because it is a repeat of the story. But they pick up and they go, and they're very religious people. But they're the kind of people who can pick up and go with their families. And that's what settled America. They didn't go for any benefits, see, except the benefit of getting to live of their own. That's what's wrong with immigration today, by the way. It's so organized, and there's so many political programs to organize them. I'm for a lot of immigration. I agree with Josh about the pause. But I also think, you know, Ben Franklin said famous, you better get ready to work if you come over here, because you'll starve if you don't. The streets are not paved with gold unless you find the gold and pave them. This carries right through the American Revolution. Do you know George Washington named the army the Continental Army? He did that in 1776. We were taken with the continent, but we got our first direct intermission about the continent in 1806 when Lewis and Clark came back. That's 7 years after Washington died. And that means in 1776, he didn't know how big the continent was. He just wanted it, you see.
We're listening to excerpts from a lecture by Dr. Larry Arn, president of Hillsdale College, called Defending the American Way of Life. Dr. Arn continues.
Think of the people who built the railroads across America. They started at both ends. And, you know, they didn't know what was out there very well. Lewis and Clark had come back and given their reports, and some people had gone out there. And, you know, it took months to get out there and months for any news to come back. Half of them were killed or more. One of the things that provoked the American Revolution, one of the steps, because, you know, big changes come in American history, in world history. Every time there's some huge things that happens, there's always some principle at stake, but then there are some events that mean that now it has to happen. That, too, is what's going on right now. Because this thing that has grown up, that has consumed half our economy and driven us to near bankruptcy, and threatens to reduce us to despotism, we've got to the place now where it can't go on much more. It's a house divided, and it must become one thing or the other. And if it becomes the new thing that it's trying to become, it will be a contemptible and miserable thing. And people are waking up and seeing that. And the kind of people who are coming to the fore right now are a resurrection of the best people from the past. The guys who made the railroads. First of all, how would you get a railroad across the Rocky Mountains? They knew they were there. Nobody had ever done that. They started building and spending money and risking everything they had, getting to the mountains, and then they'd figure it out. How are we going to live on Mars? I don't know. Get there first. See, it's the same thing, right?
Finally, Dr. Arn tells us a little of what he's learned while serving as president of Hillsdale College.
And the magic, by the way, it's exactly like the magic that happens in a college when a college is right. Each student must be individually sworn to do the work and suffer and learn. And automatically and necessarily, they help each other, you see. And when one fails to do it, it hurts more than one. And it would be easy, under the principles of today, to then adopt the principle that we can make them do it. But you can't. They have to volunteer. In our place, they volunteer when they're 18 years old, and that means they don't even know what they're volunteering for. And we tell them, sign this paper, and you're stuck. The only way not to live by is to leave. And you don't know what it means, you'll have to find out. We will help you. It'll be painful. You see? And I will tell you, I have personal experience of this. It's one of the marvels of my life, one of my favorite things that I've ever seen in my life. They just love that. Whereas if you don't extract the promise from them at the beginning, and you have to extract the promise from them before they arrive, before they get there and meet it, they have to know from the moment they start considering it, you probably don't want to do this because this is hell. And they're too young and ignorant to even explain what kind of hell it is, right? You're going to have to learn a whole bunch of really hard stuff, and you don't have got no idea what it is right now, right? And you'll get dark circles under your eyes, and if you whine, we'll kick you, you see. If you tell them that, right, that's enough Because now they've chosen it. You're not treating them the way you would train a horse or a dog. You're inviting them to join. The Declaration of Independence is an invitation to join, open to all who will believe and practice the right things.
That's Dr. Larry Arn, president of Hillsdale College, his lecture, Defending the American Way of Life. You can watch the full lecture on the Hillsdale College Freedom Library page, freedomlibrary.hillsdale.edu. A lecture from February of 2025 in Phoenix, Arizona, part of a Hillsdale National Leadership Seminar. Up next, we talk with Ryan P. Williams. His new book is a look at the life and legacy of Angelo Codevilla. I'm Scott Bertram. This is the Radio Free Hillsdale Hour.
Join me, Mark Levin, weekday afternoons from 3 to 6 on 96.5 FM and 1460 AM. KCNR, your talk radio.
Donald Trump is doing something that's never been done in American history. Now, what Trump is trying to do all at once, he wants to, what I call, reindustrialize America.
Mark Levin is on the radio.
KCNR, your talk radio.
I'm Tracy Edwards, CEO of the Redding Rancheria. Giving back to our local community is a tradition that is firmly rooted in our history.
Hi, I'm Ted Bambino, president of the Redding Rodeo. We are thrilled to be partners with the Redding Rancheria. They are an intricate part of the success of the Redding Rodeo.
Hi, I'm Julie. This is Debbie. We're here at the Shasta Family YMCA.
Hi, and I'm Kristen, the CEO. And on behalf of our team, I'd like to thank the Redding Rancheria for the many years of support for our programs and our projects like the playground.
Redding Rancheria, proud to play our part.
Join Aaron and Bill for We the People Radio, Sundays, noon until 2.
It's conservative talk radio with a liberal dose of humor. Get the whole story from experts around the world delivering facts rather than opinion.
Missed a show? Busy at noon? No problem. Listen to our free archives when you have time. No commercial interruptions or download restrictions. We the People Radio.
.us.
If you have something you'd like to get painted, then bring it to Victory Powder Coating. Powder coating is a durable, colorful, environmentally friendly alternative to paint. It's useful in automotive, agricultural, decorative, and high-temperature applications. Victory Powder Coating has become the North State leader in powder coating applications and metal finishing. They specialize in large industrial items like truck beds, agricultural equipment, and trailers. They're dedicated to providing superior work and outstanding customer care. Consider Victory Powder Coating for your next project. Victory Powder Coating.
John Cruz here with America Outdoors Radio. Be sure to tune in this weekend and catch the latest in fishing, hunting, conservation, and destinations. If you love spending time in the field or on the water or in the woods, you're going to love this show. It's America Outdoors Radio, the fastest growing outdoors radio show in the nation. Tune in Saturdays from noon to 1 p.m. on 96.5 FM and 1460 AM KCNR, your talk radio.
Hi, this is Chuck Kinney, owner of Shasta Gas Propane. Have you been affected by some of the recent changes in business ownership here in Shasta and Tehama counties? These changes follow a national trend where national companies buy up locally owned small family companies and change the culture and staff and pricing of their product. That has occurred here in the North State also. Three locally owned propane companies have been purchased by large national companies. If you're like me and you prefer to deal with locally owned companies, you may be interested to know Shasta Gas Propane, which has been around for 28 years, now has the third generation working in the company. For locally owned, family operated service and care, give us a call at 530-365-3793. Thank you.
I'm Tracy Edwards, CEO of the Redding Rancheria. Giving back to our local community is a tradition that is firmly rooted in our history.
I'm Nathan with the Redding Trail Alliance, and we're here at the Redding Bike Park. We just want to thank the Redding Rancheria for all the help they've given us over the years supporting the many projects we're doing for our community.
Hi, I'm Dan, and this is Donna, and we're with Wings of Angels.
And we'd like to thank the Redding Rancheria for their continued support over the years to our foundation.
Redding Rancheria, proud to play our part.
Welcome back to the Radio Free Hillsdale Hour. I'm Scott Bertram. Be sure to follow us on X for updated show information at Hillsdale Radio, the podcast network at HC Podcasts. We're joined by Ryan P. Williams. He's president at the Claremont Institute and publisher of the Claremont Review of Books. He's also the editor of a new book, Fighting Enemies Foreign and Domestic, The Legacy of Angelo M. Codevilla. Ryan, thanks so much for joining us.
My pleasure. Good to be here, Scott.
That name might be familiar for some of our listeners, but maybe not for others. Tell us briefly as we begin here, a little biographical sketch of Angelo Codevilla and why we want to talk about him today.
Yeah, Angelo was a very grateful immigrant as a young man. With the collapse of fascist Italy, he came to the United States, came to New York when he was about six, and loved his adopted country, learned to read and speak English by looking at the New York Times and listening to Winston-Salem cigarette ads. But Angelo was in addition to being a grateful immigrant patriot, was also a scholar and practitioner of American politics and policy, especially, though not exclusively, national security and strategy. He worked for the Senate Select Committee on Intelligence for Senator Wallop, Malcolm Wallop, and was a naval intelligence officer, and then had a long career teaching at Boston University and doing visiting stints at Stanford and elsewhere, and was close to the Claremont Institute for many, many years. He taught in our summer fellowship programs, wrote for the Claremont Review of Books, and later The American Mind, and taught us all a lot about how to think seriously about American grand strategy and how to bring ourselves back to more classical understandings of human nature and politics and how they should inform how we think about the defense of our country.
You write a brief introduction in Fighting Enemies, Foreign and Domestic, and then allow your writers to paint the picture of Angelo Codevilla. The first essay in Fighting Enemies, Foreign and Domestic is by J. Michael Waller, who has been a previous guest on this program talking about his book Big Intel, and helps to sort of answer the question, how did Angelo Codevilla, how did his intellectual pursuits help to inform his approach to advising, which he did in the intelligence domain?
Yeah, you know, Angelo, as Dr. Waller puts it in the book, in the edited volume, you know, Angelo, he understood that he had a big role overseeing the CIA and was close with Bill Casey while Angelo was working in the Senate. So they sort of worked together to try to get a handle on that agency, which right around the church committee hearings when it was embroiled in a lot of controversy, rightly so. But what Angelo didn't like about the CIA was he understood that secrecy was needed in intelligence services, but especially vis-a-vis its interactions with Congress and even the executive. What he didn't like about the CIA was its untruthfulness. As Angelo liked to joke, you know, you'd be questioning these CIA bureaucrats in front of Congress or even directors sometimes. And their fallback option, which they always had recourse to, was, well, trust us, we're doing the right thing, we have all the information. And then you would want to poke them a little bit and say, well, why do you think that? And why did you do this other than that? And what information are you basing that on? And often their response would be, well, we can't tell you, that's classified. So this was endlessly frustrating to Angelo. And so as Michael Waller points out in the edited volume, he kept the CIA up at night. His great intelligence and probing questions and relentlessness in pursuit of untruthful intelligence apparatus and apparat chicks made them, many of them, come to dislike him quite a bit.
Ryan P. Williams with us. He's the editor of the new book, Fighting Enemies, Foreign and Domestic, The Legacy of Angelo M. Codevilla. In Stephen Hayward's essay, he says, in a world in which foreign conflicts and military strategy did not exist, Angelo Codevilla would instead have emerged as one of the premier social thinkers of our era. How would you describe his influence in that sector?
Yeah, his biggest legacy, in a way, was this 2010 article he wrote for the American Spectator, and then some follow-ups about the ruling class. That subtitle was something like how they've corrupted American politics and what we can do about it. And Angelo, you know, was a keen student of the decline of American education and how it had infused America's elites. And he identified this phenomenon that, again, grew out of progressivism, this deference to expert bureaucratic management over popular and public and electoral and democratic control of U.S. policy. this had been a rising problem he identified throughout the 20th century, and it had reached a kind of apogee with Barack Obama's presidency. And it was this new notion of American governance where the people, you know, intervened occasionally in elections, but the real work of government would be conducted by a well-credentialed expert class, which Angela pointed out had increasingly been educated at fewer and fewer institutions and had a worldview that was, whereas in previous eras, you might have your Harvard guys and your Ivy Leaguers generally involved in government, but they came from all over the country in all walks of life. This notion that this ruling class became more insular and more incurious about the world and about worldviews that might challenge its presumptions had really become an acute problem in American politics. And this class somewhat imperialistically thought it had the right and the duty to rule the rest of the country. Messy democratic elections intervening to the contrary, be damned. And he thought this was a very unhealthy thing to happen in a republic. And so that essay was read by Rush Limbaugh, most of it on the air. It became a little book afterwards.
Cotovella was an early advocate of a national missile defense system, and it appears to the book appalled that we have not developed one. We don't have a defensive system. Now, President Trump has once again, as of early this year in January, put out the call for an Iron Dome for America, a national missile defense system. Do you think we're any closer to making that happen, and would an installation of such be an appropriate tribute to the man?
Certainly would it be an appropriate tribute. Angelo was involved very early. I mean, he had a technical degree from Rutgers amongst his other studies, so he knew the math and the physics quite well and had been involved since the Reagan administration in this project. And most Americans think we have missile defense, but we don't really. We have some ground-based interceptors in Alaska and elsewhere. We have mobile, sort of medium and short range defense, the THAAD system on seaborne platforms, but we really don't have a comprehensive missile defense. And the reasons we don't are complicated and trace back to this Cold War and swirling theories about international relations. But Angelo, and like President Reagan and others since, thought that mutually assured destruction was a morally crazy way to conduct nuclear policy, and they thought better than two great superpowers promising to destroy one another and thus being very wary of ever actually doing it. The better approach would be to actually have a defense system that would prevent our enemies, whether they be China or Russia or our adversaries, from even contemplating a first strike or the possibility of a response. Angela thought that was the much better moral option. He thought the technology was there, and he was right. We are not that much closer. I mean, President Trump has set the Golden Dome, as he's calling it, goal, which is great, but now we would need to devote real resources to that end, and that project is still in its cradle.
Ryan P. Williams is president at the Claremont Institute and also publisher of the Claremont Review of Books, editor of the new book, Fighting Enemies, Foreign and Domestic, The Legacy of Angelo M. Cotovella. Ryan, thanks so much for joining us here on the Radio Free Hillsdale Hour.
My pleasure. Thanks, Scott.
Up next, we begin a series with Hillsdale physics professor Nathan Herring. He'll take us inside the life and work of Sir Isaac Newton. I'm Scott Bertram. This is the Radio Free Hillsdale Hour.
Dr. Lauren on Tuesdays at 6 p.m. behind the pink mic for breast cancer conversations about prevention and diagnosis to healing stories and words from expert guests. Behind the Pink Mic is proudly sponsored by Sizzle's Kitchen and Swell Endeavor. Tune in with Dr. Lauren every Tuesday at 6 p.m. on KCNR 96.5 FM, 1460 AM, and streaming at KCNR1450.com. Behind the Pink Mic, let's talk healing, hope, and community.
Looking for work? O2 Employment Services has been working with local job seekers for the past 20 years. If you're tired of uploading your resume and getting no response, it's time to let O2 help you find that perfect position. Oh, and by the way, you pay absolutely nothing for our service. If you'd like our help, head on over to our website at o2es.com, click Apply Now, and complete our online application. We have connections with over 600 local businesses. Once we have your information and understand what you're looking for, for, we can introduce you to all the positions you may wish to consider. We currently have over 100 available positions, and we would love to match you with the one you're looking for. O2 Employment Services, the North State's leading staffing agency. Give us a call at 530-223-4674. That's 530-223-4674. Or visit us online at o2es.com.
Celebrate the holiday season at Redding Garden of Lights, open November 21st through January 4th at the Sundial Bridge and Turtle Bay in Redding, California. Featuring 10 acres of illuminated gardens filled with over 2 million lights, plus holiday-themed music, food and drinks, glowing swings, and more. New for 2025, upgrade your experience with a train ride on the new Turtle Express, adorned with festive lights and wintry displays. Redding Garden of Lights is presented by Dignity Health Mercy Medical Center Redding. Buy tickets online at turtlebay.org.
Now is a great time to prepare for the upcoming wildfire season. REU and city staff are busy clearing vegetation to mitigate wildfire risk to our power lines, facilities, and the community. You can also prepare by trimming back shrubs and tree branches that are closer than 5 feet from your home. Clear debris from your roof and gutter and clear dead vegetation on your property. For information about tree trimming and proximity to power lines, call 530-224-4356. Please remember, we all need to work together to prevent wildfires in our community.
If you're tired of artificial intelligence and dishonest news, tune in to Poke the Hornet's Nest every other Sunday at 8 a.m.
Join Nick Gardner and Doug Janke, two hosts who were educated at School of Hard Knocks. Get a layman's view of local government as well as our take on national and world events.
If you're woke, go back to bed. You won't like us.
This show's for educated voters, not for people that voted for Kamala Harris.
Tune in to Poke the Hornet's Nest every other Sunday, 8 a.m. here on KCNR1460.com, 96.5 FM, and 48.
Hi there. It's a sunny reminder from Alliance Heating and Air. Thinking about going solar? Now's the time to act. The 30% federal solar tax credit may be ending December 31st, 2025. But if you install your system soon, you could still save an average of up to $12,700. Don't wait. Call Alliance Heating and Air at 530-221-2642 to lock in your savings. We make it simple. We make it smart. And that's why everybody calls us.
Everybody calls us.
This is Ted Leidy with Northern Firearms Instruction. Do you have a crazy schedule and can't seem to get to a class to qualify for your CCW, CCW renewal, or maybe learn to use that new firearm you just purchased? Consider a private class with NFI. Learn to shoot a handgun, rifle, shotgun, or even a BB gun. Classes are taught by an instructor that you choose on your dates and location. Give NFI a call at 530-999-1822 or visit us online at usgunpro.com. This is Ted Leidy, and I'll see you at the range.
Welcome back to the Radio Free Hillsdale Hour. I'm Scott Bertram. Be sure to check out the Hillsdale College Podcast Network with almost a dozen shows to choose from. Podcast.hillsdale.edu. We're joined by Dr. Nathan Herring, Assistant Professor of Physics at Hillsdale College. Dr. Herring, thanks for joining us.
Yeah, thanks for having me.
Excited to have you here to start a brief series profiling great physicists. And we start this first time with perhaps the physicist that people know best, which is Sir Isaac Newton. What are Newton's most lasting contributions to physics? Why do they still matter today?
Yeah, Newton is inarguably the most famous physicist in our history. And if anything, his reputation might be a little bit underrated in the eyes of the public. It's really hard to overstate how impressive of a leap physics makes in the hands of Newton. Just to run through some of his major accomplishments, he is one of the co-inventors of calculus. If you were to ask him, he would say he did it first, the other being the German mathematician Leibniz.
Mm-hmm.
Calculus, of course, is the mathematics of continuous change. It's the language of physics, and it has had lasting importance on many other areas as well. He gives us the first quantitative system of mechanics, that is, the theory of motion, why things change in their position. In this way, he's building on the work of some of his predecessors like Kepler and Galileo, but he gives us a universal quantitative system from which we can deduce the motions of any object. He also gives us the first successful mathematical theory of the phenomenon of gravitation,
mm-hmm.
right? And doing so can explain the motions of the planets and, of course, the famous falling apple.
Yep.
In addition to this, he made a number of discoveries in the field of optics, so the science of light. He was the first scientist to demonstrate that white light is composed of different colors. Prior to that, many other thinkers had experimented with prisms, and they had noticed that when you send white light through a prism, you get many different colors. Some earlier thinkers like Aristotle thought the prism was somehow altering the white light, but Newton took many different colors and put them into a prism, showing that they produce white light. He also built the first reflecting telescope, and those principles of the reflecting telescope, those are the same principles that are used by our state-of-the-art space telescopes that we use today, most of which are reflecting telescopes. He also gave us the first particle theory of light. He postulated that light was composed of these small, indivisible elements that he called corpuscles. And this is very important because it launches a centuries-long debate between different European scientists as to whether light is a wave or a particle, and they kind of go back and forth. And the issue isn't fully resolved until the 20th century with quantum theory. And as for why are these ideas still relevant today, well, his mechanics and his theory of gravitation still give an accurate understanding of what happens when you apply those ideas within their so-called regime of validity. So when objects are moving slow compared to the speed of light, when their mass is not too large or you're not too close to them, then they really do follow Newton's principles. And so I am confident that engineers and physicists 200 years from now will still be using Newton's laws to build all kinds of devices.
We're going to talk a little bit more about a few of those things you mentioned, but he has this work called the Principia Mathematica. So what made that so revolutionary?
Yeah, this is his landmark text that he almost doesn't publish. He has to be urged to release this by a friend of his, Edmund Halley. Newton famously was very reluctant to share his work because he had some bad experiences as a youth, as a young scientist, where his ideas were not always well received by some of his peers. And so he became very defensive. But in this text, he gives an account using geometry. So he's already developed calculus, but he refuses to use it in the book because he wants his ideas to be accepted in as convincingly a way as possible. So he wants to use the mathematics that his peers are familiar with, which at that time is geometry. But in the text, what he does is he shows how you can give a unified account of so-called terrestrial motion, the motion of things on Earth, and celestial motion. So it is the first time where we unify the physics of the heavens, as the ancients would have called it, and the physics of ordinary stuff happening here on Earth.
Now, let's talk a bit about motion. Can you walk us through Newton's three laws of motion in plain language, and then why were they such a breakthrough?
Yeah. So, yeah, these are the famous three laws, which are supposed to apply with equal force to all systems in the universe. And they can be phrased in different ways. So in plain language, the first law, which is the law of inertia, is the idea that an object will move in a straight line at a constant speed or will stay completely at rest unless it is subjected to some sort of force. And why this is really important is it tells us that the natural state of motion of an object is not is being at rest or being at constant velocity. Velocity in physics is both the speed of an object and its direction of travel. What Newton is showing us here is that constant velocity is a perfectly natural state of motion. If you stumble upon something in the world and it's moving in a straight line at a constant speed, there's actually nothing to explain there. This is super revolutionary because in Aristotle's physics, the natural state of motion of things is being at rest. Galileo later shows that velocity is relative. He has this famous thought experiment where he says, you know, if you were to be captured in the night and wake up at the bottom of a ship, and the ship was sailing on completely calm seas, and you hadn't yet looked out the window, could you tell that you were in motion or not? And he argues you wouldn't be able to. Everything would be moving with you. And thus, how can we say that something is truly moving as opposed to truly at rest? Isn't that relative? So Newton is taking that idea and making that sort of one of his first laws. Good. So then, in the first law, he tells us how this state of motion could change, right? You need a force. And so that's what the second law does. It tells you exactly how that happens. So the second law says that the total force felt by a system A system is just the term for some mass or collection of masses that a physicist is studying. So the total force felt by a system is equal to its mass times its acceleration. This is the famous equation F equals ma that many of the listeners will remember from high school. And the idea here is acceleration is the rate at which an object's velocity is changing. So it's speeding up, slowing down, or changing direction. Mm-hmm. And that acceleration is determined by the force felt by that object. And then there's this other quantity that appears there, mass, m, and mass is a measure of the object's resistance to having its motion changed. So the greater the mass, the more force required to achieve the same acceleration. And then finally, his third law tells us that every force always represents an interaction between two systems, and each of those two systems will feel the same amount of force due to that interaction, but directed in opposite directions. So if I push my hand on the table, I exert a force on the table exerts a force back on my hand. Those forces are always equal, but pointing in opposite directions. So I push down on the table, so the table feels a downward force, my hand feels an upward force, and they're of equivalent strength. And this law is actually super important in that from it, one can deduce an important principle called the conservation of momentum. Today in physics, we believe the conservation of momentum is actually a more fundamental idea than Newton's third law. But when you teach an introductory physics course, this is actually the law of physics, this Newton's third law, what is used to derive this first appearance of conservation of momentum. Hmm. And I should just say, why are these three laws so important? They provide a framework for how to understand all motion. They give you a recipe. So the idea is step one, identify whatever mass whose motion you want to study. Step two, identify all the forces acting on that mass. And now you may need a separate theory for each of those forces. Okay, maybe there's electrical forces, magnetic forces, gravitational forces, whatever. Each of those could have their own theory. But once you've identified what those forces are and how to describe them mathematically, you sum them together and plug them into Newton's second law, then divide by the mass, and that will give you an expression for the so-called equation of motion for that object. It'll tell you how that object will accelerate, and from that you can use calculus to predict where that object will be at later times.
We'll continue in a moment with Dr. Nathan Herring from Hillsdale's Physics Department as we discuss the life and work of Sir Isaac Newton. I'm Scott Bertram. This is the Radio Free Hillsdale Hour. Great food, affordable prices, friendly service. You'll find all that and more 7 days a week at Lulu's Eat-In and Drink-In Establishment.
Open 6 a.m. to 9 p.m. Monday through Saturday and 6 a.m. to 3 p.m. Sundays. From homemade soup, salads, and sandwiches to great steak, seafood, and Italian dishes, everything is made fresh daily and served with a smile, or we're happy to serve your meals to go. Simply call in your order to 243-6251. Breakfast, lunch, or dinner, daily specials, and prime rib are available any time of the day. Lulu's Eat-In and Drink-In Establishment, where Pine meets Cypress Avenue, home of the best Bloody Mary in town.
Thousands of veterans in Shasta County have served our country with pride, and many of them rely on social services and the VA clinic for their health and welfare needs. Transportation is key to their ability to access these services. Help salute our veterans by making a cash or check donation to provide free bus passes to local veterans in need this giving season. Look for our Rubba Bus Drive this Friday at Loomis Bank locations on Hartnell Avenue and Hilltop Drive in Reading, in Anderson, and the public parking lot at 4305 Shasta Dam Boulevard between 7 a.m. and 3 p.m. or make a donation online at robbaveterans.com.
Hello there, this is Kevin Cry. Every other Sunday, I will be on KCNR, your talk radio, 96.5 FM and 1460 AM. I will be discussing the issues that matter to you most. You'll be able to call in directly, ask questions, and have a dialogue open and free every other Sunday right here on KCNR, your talk radio.
This Hawaiian mini vacation is brought to your radio by Maui Bob's Office Cleaning. So what does professional office cleaning have to do with relaxing in a tropical paradise? Frankly, nothing.
but Maui Bob and the crew want to remind you to be sure to take the time for what's important in this workaday world. Family, friends, and yes, even yourself. And if their professional office cleaning services can help you make that time, give them a call at 221-5868. This Hawaiian mini vacation was brought to your radio by Maui Bob's Office Cleaning, 221-5868.
Hey, it's your liberty-loving Latino amigo, Rich Valdez, host of America at Night. Weeknights, we're letting you know what's happening live all across America. We'll have newsmakers and experts coming on, talking about the hot topics of the day. Plus, in our third hour, whatever you want to talk about with open phones across America, our nightly town hall. I look forward to hearing from you on the next America at Night with me, Rich Valdez.
Weeknights from 7 to 10 p.m. on KCNR.
We're back on the Radio Free Hillsdale Hour. I'm Scott Bertram. We've been talking with Dr. Nathan Herring, Assistant Professor of Physics at Hillsdale College, about the life and work of Sir Isaac Newton. Dr. Herring, all right, the Newton's law of universal gravitation, how did that change the way people viewed the universe?
Yeah, this is great. So Newton's first three laws are they're giving us a paradigm by which to understand motion. Doing that would have already made him a household name. Like, that's already amazing work. But then he goes on to say, oh, I can also give you an example of how one of these forces works. And the force he gives us an example of is only one of the most important ones, gravitation. And what he says is everything with mass attracts everything else with mass. And the strength of that interaction varies as the product of the masses, but then also as the square of the distance between the masses increases, the force gets smaller. So that's a mathematical equation for calculating the force of gravity between any two masses. And note, it's all masses. So now this immediately shatters the notion that celestial bodies, planets, moons, stars, etc., are following a different set of principles or experiencing different forces than apples, arrows, you and me. It's the same gravity for all of them. And this is important because ancient thinkers, you know, they noticed that celestial bodies seem to move in these perfect, unfailing trajectories. And whereas the motion of objects on the surface of the Earth can be more turbulent, and so they even had this idea that, you know, the celestial motions were perfect, and the motions of objects on the Earth are accidental or turbulent or can be confounded by many different effects. This idea shows us that really it's the same forces at play. Newton's idea shows us that it's the same force at play in both of these cases. Additionally, this idea of a universal force acting on all bodies in conjunction with his three laws of motion starts to introduce the notion of the clockwork universe, which becomes very popular in the following decades and centuries. And that's the idea that we can think of the cosmos as analogous to a vast, finely calibrated clockwork machine governed by simple, universal, and mathematical laws. And Newton loved this notion. He was aware of this, and for him, it resonated deeply with his religious views. I guess the last thing we should say about this law of universal gravitation is it becomes the gold standard for scientific explanation. Here is a mathematical theory immediately amenable to experimental investigation, and it makes predictions. So following this work, many other physicists are going to try to produce something like Newton's law of gravitation.
What about Newton the person? He's often described as brilliant but reclusive. What was he actually like? What were his relationships like with other scientists of his time?
Yeah, this, I wish I could tell you, I mean, depending on your preferences, you may find that description of brilliant but reclusive as disappointing, or maybe we would wish Newton was a more charismatic figure. In this case, that reputation really is accurate. What we know about Newton was he was a perfectionist. When he did experiments and did mathematical calculations, his colleagues write that he was obsessed with verifying his work, triple checking, quadruple checking, always looking for sources of error. He was obsessed with the possibility of being wrong. And this drove him to have this kind of meticulous approach to the way he did science. He was notoriously private, reserved, and often defensive. He frequently delayed publishing his results, sometimes for decades. And this is because when he had been a young physicist, I alluded to this a little bit earlier, but he had a run-in with one of the preeminent thinkers of his time in Britain, Robert Hooke. And Hooke, they had kind of an acrimonious relationship. Hooke actually tried to take credit for some of Newton's ideas, and this really bothered Newton, who felt like he couldn't defend himself. He actually looked up to Hooke as a sort of scientific hero. And this caused him to become extremely paranoid that people were going to steal his ideas. And so kind of paradoxically, this leads to him just not sharing them. He just compiles private notebooks of important results. And it's only on the urging of some of his friends that he actually releases them to the broader public. He was known, however, to be an extremely loyal friend to those that could sort of penetrate that icy exterior, as attested by his longest friends, John Wickens, who was a longtime friend and research assistant, and Edmund Halley, who was an astronomer, who is really the person we should credit with allowing us to learn about Newton's thoughts. Because without Halley's encouragement, I don't think we would have, Newton's work wouldn't have been published and broadly received. However, despite this reputation as a loyal friend, he was also known to have, as I said, moments of extreme paranoia and vindictiveness. Additionally, when Robert Hooke passed away, Newton was elected the president of the Royal Society, the most prestigious scientific institution in England at the time. And it is alleged that Newton is the reason why we have no portraits of Hooke. So every president of the Royal Society has a portrait of them. And Robert Hooke's is suspiciously missing. And there are some accounts that Newton actually secretly burned all of the portraits of him to get his revenge.
Talking with Dr. Nathan Herring about Sir Isaac Newton, if that's what Newton was really like, are there any common myths or misconceptions about Newton or his work that we should clear up?
I would just say that, so Newton is the closest, one of the few examples we have in the history of physics of someone who really was a reclusive genius. I think oftentimes the public perception of scientists, in particular theoretical physicists, is that they work alone and can be antisocial. In Newton's case, this actually is fairly true. But that being said, he actually didn't spend most of his life working in the area of physics. The latter part of his career, he became affiliated with the Mint. He was, in fact, at one point in charge of the Mint and took that role extremely seriously. And actually wrote in some places that was he regarded as like the highlight of his career, which is fascinating. He also, in addition to being a great theorist, was someone very interested in experimental science. He wasn't just content to do these kinds of mathematical calculations. He engaged in a lot of experiments, as I mentioned, experiments with light. He even experimented on his own body. There's a famous account of him sticking a blunt needle into his eye, into the space between the back of his eyeball and his eye socket, and then he applied pressure and took notes about what he was seeing. And he induced, in doing this, I do not recommend anyone do this experiment. It's kind of crazy that Newton did such a thing. But he noticed that by applying pressure, he would see different kinds of optical illusions, colors, rings. And this was important. He was trying to figure out, are the visual sensations of our experience, are they somehow caused by the brain, or are they reflecting features out there in the world themselves? Are the colors in the objects themselves, or are they somehow produced by our brain? And by experimenting on his eyeball like this, he saw that he could induce these sort of visual hallucinations, which led him to believe that the brain was actually generating these images in response to what is out there in the world.
What is that line perhaps we can draw from Newton to modern physics, Newton to Einstein, or Newton to even present day?
Yeah, Newton is the first physicist, as I said, to give us a mathematical paradigm of doing physics. And that is then followed by subsequent thinkers who build on his work. So we have people like the French physicist Auguste Coulomb gives us the first mathematical theory of the electric force, and it is remarkably similar to Newton's law of gravitation. In fact, he explicitly says he's emulating Newton's gravitational force as a first guess. So it's again a force that is an inverse, so-called inverse square law. And this work continues. We see in the work of later physicists like James Clerk Maxwell, trying to come up with a unified theory of electricity and magnetism, just as Newton had unified terrestrial and celestial motion. And then even into Einstein. Einstein is the first physicist to give us a different account of motion that can hold in regimes where Newton's laws are seen to fail. And he's very conscious, aware that he's building on the work of Newton. In fact, mm-hmm. Einstein always had three portraits of three different physicists in his office: Newton, Maxwell, and Faraday, with Newton kind of positioned first. And he was very aware that he was building on Newton's work. In fact, he gives us the second mathematical theory of gravity, the general theory of relativity, which replaces Newton's theory. So Newton's work absolutely sets the stage for how physicists are going to approach their subject, and many of the later thinkers are very aware that they are emulating his practice.
Dr. Nathan Herring, Assistant Professor of Physics at Hillsdale College, as we have these profiles of great physicists, starting with Sir Isaac Newton. Dr. Herring, thanks so much for joining us here on the Radio Free Hillsdale Hour. That will wrap up this edition of the Radio Free Hillsdale Hour. Our thanks to Dr. Larry Ard. His lecture, Defending the American Way of Life, you can find all of it at freedomlibrary.hillsdale.edu. Ryan P. Williams, his new book, Fighting Enemies Foreign and Domestic, The Legacy of Angelo Cotevilla, and Hillsdale Physics Professor Nathan Herring. Remember, you can hear new episodes every week on this station. You also can find extended versions of some of our interviews or listen anytime to the podcast at podcast.hillsdale.edu or wherever you get your audio. Until next week, I'm Scott Bertram, and this has been the Radio Free Hillsdale Hour.
Great food, affordable prices, friendly service. You'll find all that and more 7 days a week at Lulu's Eat-In and Drink-In Establishment.
Open 6 a.m. to 9 p.m. Monday through Saturday and 6 a.m. to 3 p.m. Sundays. From homemade soup, salads, and sandwiches to great steak, seafood, and Italian dishes, everything is made fresh daily and served with a smile, or we're happy to serve your meals to go. Simply call in your order to 243-6251. Breakfast, lunch, or dinner, daily specials, and prime rib are available any time of the day. Lulu's Eat-In and Drink-In Establishment, where Pine meets Cypress Avenue, home of the best Bloody Mary in town.
Thousands of veterans in Shasta County have served our country with pride, and many of them rely on social services and the VA clinic for their health and welfare needs. Transportation is key to their ability to access these services. Help salute our veterans by making a cash or check donation to provide free bus passes to local veterans in need this giving season. Look for our Rubba Bus Drive this Friday at Plumas Bank locations on Hartnell Avenue and Hilltop Drive in Reading, in Anderson, and the public parking lot at 4305 Shasta Dam Boulevard between 7 a.m. and 3 p.m. or make a donation online at robbaveterans.com.
Cold and flu season is here. At Orchard Nutrition Center, we understand every mom wants the best for her children. That's why our wellness department is stocked with trusted supplements to support your kids' health all year long. Build a strong foundation with multivitamin chewables and gummies, perfect for everyday wellness and immune support, and omega-3 gummies that boost brain development and keep their immune system resilient. Natural support to help them stay strong through every season. Because at Orchard Nutrition Center, we believe healthy kids make happy homes.
Hi, this is Chuck Kinney, owner of Shasta Gas Propane. Have you been affected by some of the recent changes in business ownership here in Shasta and Tehama counties? These changes follow a national trend where national companies buy up locally owned small family companies and change the culture and staff and pricing of their product. That has occurred here in the North State also. Three locally owned propane companies have been purchased by large national companies. If you're like me and you prefer to deal with locally owned companies, you may be interested to know Shasta Gas Propane, which has been around for 28 years, now has the third generation working in the company. For locally owned, family operated service and care, give us a call at 530-365-3793. Thank you.
Reference to God as the author of the laws of nature and a confident assertion that human beings are endowed by their Creator with certain inalienable rights. Far from being hostile or indifferent to religion, America's founders understood the theology of the Declaration to be an essential part of the education of citizens.
This Constitution Minute was brought to you by Hillsdale College.
To receive a free pocket constitution and declaration, go to constitutionminute.com.
The news from Town Hall is brought to you on KCNR Shasta Reading by Shasta Regional Medical Center. Your life, your health, your choice. Shasta Regional Medical Center.